Senate Rules Committee will come to order. We have a couple bills we want to process here first. Senate File 1081, Senator Rest. And members, these are bills that get here because of commissions or something that involves legislators on them. Is there no chair for you?
Should I?
We should get a chair there somewhere. The British system, they make you stand. Senator Rett, and our intent here would be to, well, this one mostly is the commission, so. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. When I had requested this morning, when I saw the committee was meeting this afternoon, that you take up this bill, we got some suggestions back from your office on improving the language. And so.
But we wouldn't do that here.
Well, I do have an amendment that would accomplish that. And so what happened after that is that I met with Mr. Watson and with Senator Moore, and we were looking at the language of actually the duties of the commission in particular and changing that. And then Mr. Watson made a couple of suggestions for some more technical amendments.
So maybe that is in the purview of this committee?
Yeah, so okay. He actually, on the appointing authority, and so it looks like, you know, a delete everything amendment. Most of it's the same language, but if you would be so kind, I would like you to adopt it, and I'll explain it.
Okay, and the changes are, by and large, things that are in the purview of this committee. So,
absolutely.
Okay. So he must have run down to his office real quick. Why don't you start explaining, and then he will be here. Here he is. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, as you indicated, the reason why this particular commission bill is coming to the Rules Committee before hopefully it moves to the Finance Committee is because it establishes a new commission that, or advisory board or task force or whatever, that has legislators on it. And all of those by rules need to come to the Rules Committee.
Okay, Senator Langseth moves the A3 delete everything. Has this?
No, it's not a delete everything.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's not a delete. The A3. Senator Langseth moves the A3. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We made a couple of changes in the duties of the appointing authority to suggest that not only the legislative appointing authority take into consideration a number of criteria for the public members of this commission, but also the governor does as well. And then actually the in the duties, we consolidated, using some suggestions that were coming from your office, Senator Moore and I consolidated the duties of the members. What this commission is a commission of legislators and public members, representatives from the business community, that would work together to make recommendations to the legislature regarding the assets and opportunities that immigrant families that settle in Minnesota, the new Americans, we're calling it, bring to our state, and in turn the way in which we can improve the economic and social condition, introduction into civic life of new Americans.
And so the bill has been where, and it's going?
It's been to state and local government, and it needs to be referred to finance because there is an open appropriation at this point. And I don't think it's appropriate to fill that in here. Is that?
Not the budget. So a 10-member commission members, 4 Senate, 4 House, 2 Governor. It would be 2 senators, 1 majority, 1 minority, and 2 House members, 1 majority, 1 minority.
And then public members.
And then public members
appointed
on top
by
of
the
that.
Legislature.
Yeah. And this would sunset in 2009. I think this is not meant to be permanent.
That's correct. And so it's not codified.
Senator Fredrickson? Okay, so on the Langseth motion first, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Okay, then on the general bill, Senator Langseth moves that Senate file 1081 as amended be recommended pass, referred to the Finance Committee.
It's a good bill.
So on the general discussion of whether, Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, do we have any policy as to when we will appoint legislators to be on commissions like this? Is it an ad hoc of one situation to another, or if it's, we'll appoint legislators if they're short term like this one is? Or?
Mr. Chairman?
We go to the subcommittee on committees, and I presumably if this passes this session, we would meet sometime right after session and make some appointments.
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking more of a general policy. Oh. When we will.
Guess when they're open, we try to appoint them.
Mr. Chairman, one of the guidelines that we have adopted in the, or that we're using at least in the State and Local Government Committee on task force is to ask people to put in their bill, like there is in this one, a request for when the appointments should be made by. And so if you look on the amendment, we are... we actually say must be completed but by September 1st of 2007 so that we don't get commissions or task force where the appointing authorities don't have any guidance as to when they need to be appointed.
Okay, any further general discussion here? And I presume Senator Sentum?
I'm just thinking out loud, is there any kind of nexus between this commission and, for instance, I've never been invited to a meeting. I think I'm on the Asian Pacific Council or Commission, and is there a Hispanic Council or Commission, or are there things like that, I don't know, that this could cross-fertilize with, or that we could have people, for instance, on those commissions maybe being part of this group?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sinjim, if you look at lines 121 and 122, the appointing authorities, which would be the legislature and the governor, are asked to collaborate with one another and with the councils that you just referenced in the chapter 3.9, 223, 225, and 226, which are those groups.
Okay.
And the general thrust here is this, Senator Russ, this is an issue that's front and center nationally and locally.
This is a workforce economic development issue. The state demographer and the state economist, Mr. Chairman, tell us that within a couple of decades we're going to be 100,000 jobs short in Minnesota, even if everybody around who lives there now is working. And this is an opportunity to capitalize on those assets that the immigrant community brings to us. We had testimony in the State and Local Government Committee from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, who were very enthusiastic about the possibilities of participating in this commission and making recommendations to the legislature.
This goes to this issue when... state economists and state demographer told us that there's a reverse triangle now where there's fewer people behind us for the first time in history in Minnesota, and we need to make sure that every one of those people behind us has the opportunity to be productive socially and economically. Is that kind of...
Exactly. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So, Langseth motion then for recommendation to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted.
Thank you,
Senator Rest. Senator Solan, Senate File 15. And Senator Solan has a, as I recall, a commission.
It's task force, Mr. Chair.
Legislative task force. And there's a proposed A6 that I believe, Senator Solan, you have seen?
I have seen it.
Okay, so let's get the Senator Clark moves the A6. And it's slightly different from what was in your original bill.
It decreases the number of senators and representatives and makes the task force report to the Legislative Commission on Healthcare Access.
So it's to try to bring some rationale to all this.
Oh, but there's another.
Senator Solon?
Another issue is it removes the appropriation, so I'm wondering what type of staff support we would have to be able to convene the task force.
Oh, I see. We don't have to decide that here. We could send that to the Finance Committee to decide. Senator Berglund?
I might just remind Senator Pretner Solon that the Healthcare Access Commission itself does not have an appropriation.
How does it function?
It uses legislative staff and calls on departments to produce information and fiscal notes. And, you know, it is interim work, and we sort of expect our committee staff to do interim work.
Senator Solon? Mr. Chair.
Senator Pretner Solon, my apology.
Senator Berglund or whomever, do task force have the same ability to call upon staff, especially if we don't have a chair in a health committee, to be able to use staff for the same resources for a task force?
Well, I assume if it's a task force that's sending their recommendations to the Healthcare Access Commission, it would somewhat be relying on the same staff the commission would rely on.
With the appropriation out.
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, no, there's more. This has to go to finance under any circumstance,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Under any circumstance, yes. This bill goes to finance. But we don't have to, I didn't notice that part of it. We don't necessarily have to make that determination here.
If Mr. Chair, for right now, if we could reinstate them, that if we could delete on page 2, line 9. No, excuse me, 2, line 10. Or I guess delete everything after 2.7, I guess. No, we still need the expiration, so everything after 2.8.
Mr. Watson, a suggestion?
Mr. Chairman, if you take a look at the bill, the last page of the bill, page 8, lines 5 and 6, you might want to just reinstate those two lines in place of line 2.5 under the amendment.
That
would get the bill back to where it was when it came here.
Okay, why don't we do that on the A6? And then Senator Berglund, Solon, and Cohen, you can chat about this in finance. I think that would be fine. And whoever else is on the finance? Betson's on it.
Also on the amendment, delete lines 2.9 and 2.10, because they were the ones that deleted the appropriation to the LCC for that.
Okay, so the A6 now, delete 2.9 and 2.10, and insert from the bill, page 8, lines 8.5 and 8.6, where?
In place of line 2.5.
In place of line 2.5. Okay? So that's the amendment that's being offered by Senator Clark, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that can be discussed full finance. Okay, discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Senator Clark then moves that Senate file 15 as amended. We recommend to pass and re-refer to the Finance Committee. Discussion on that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Senator Solon, thank you. Good luck getting money out of that Finance Committee. I just spent a half hour with the chair and couldn't get anything. Okay, 3 and 4. Members, this is an opening discussion, but I think we want to look at Rule 7 in the permit rules, which calls for a budget resolution, which we frankly haven't really been using. perhaps either fix it or repeal it. And I think you'll be stunned to find out it's about 2 or 3 pages. And then I wanted to discuss a potential limit on amendments for budget bills, which I believe, is that also in the packet? Okay. But this is an open discussion. Literally have not done much vetting of this, even Senator Senjum and Frederickson and Olson within the majority caucus. There's been general discussions, so there's no decisions been made here. But the general discussions have been, you know, we really don't use Rule 7. So why is it there? And what are we actually trying to accomplish with Rule 7 in terms of Senate procedures and process? And so what I'm suggesting is maybe we eliminate Rule 7 and try something like that floor amendment 0001-2 to accomplish this. Allow members of the Senate to generally work on budget bills when they come out of committee based on what our targets really are, but do it in a way that everybody views as a fair discussion. You have to have amendments that don't just spend money that we don't have, but you have to figure out how to pay for it. That's the general idea here. And all I'm really looking for, members, is a bipartisan way to have the floor action related to budget targets and amendments on the floor, one that members of both the majority and minority are comfortable with, one that is accountable and allows for a better floor debate on budget bills, which typically have some disagreements. For example, a tax bill, there'll be some disagreements. So that's really what we'd like to try to accomplish, and this is the opening discussion of that. So, Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when I saw this stuff was on the agenda, I was thinking about that, and I think you know that in a perfect world, maybe a theoretical perfect world, I like Rule 7. the practicality of it has been such that it's very difficult to implement in a way that makes sense.
Why don't we have Mr. Watson just go through Rule 7 quickly so we all get a flavor for what it is we've not been paying much attention to for the last decade or so. Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, though the rule is long, I hope it is laid out in a way that is logical and consistent. So I'll just go through it from beginning to end. Or maybe I should begin by highlighting two main features of it. One is a Senate budget resolution adopted by the whole Senate, and the other is a target resolution for the several different appropriation bills that is adopted by the Committee on Finance. First, in the paragraph 7.2, it talks about that overall budget resolution. It would start in the Tax Committee. It has started in the Tax Committee in both 2001 and 2003. They set just an overall limit.
And who was the chair during those years?
Well, Senator Doug Johnson was the chairman of the Finance Committee in 2001.
No, Tax Committee.
Who was the chairman? I think it might have been Senator Pogomilek.
So I tried. I tried to do this. So
it passed from the Pogomilek Committee and went to the Doug Johnson Committee in 2001. And then went to the floor and was adopted. The second stop after the Tax Committee, just setting the overall limit on revenue and spending, is the Finance Committee. And in the Finance Committee, they're free to either agree to those proposed limits on revenues and spending that the Tax Committee suggested or disagree.
Adopt different limits.
And I think in 2001, the Finance Committee under Senator Doug Johnson agreed with those limits. The resolution went to the floor and it was adopted. In 2003, Senator Pogomiller's resolution went to Senator Cohen, I think, and the Finance Committee adopted different limits. And under the rule, as you may see there, if the Finance Committee, this is line 3.27, if the Committee on Finance recommends a different amount, then it has to go back to the Tax Committee. Or it actually has to go to the Rules Committee before it may be considered by the Senate. And somewhere between the Finance Committee and the Rules Committee, the resolution disappeared in 2003. didn't happen. 2005, I don't think we even got started with a resolution in the tax committee. Once the resolution gets adopted on the floor, we move into paragraph 7.3, and the job then of the finance committee is to take that overall limit and divide it up bill by bill. They have 14 days to do that. I should have mentioned that 30-day limit on the overall resolution would be this year, March 30th, so a couple weeks from now. Under 7.4, the finance committee has 14 days to adopt what we've called a target resolution. The bills are listed in Rule 7.5. Those are all the bills from the tax committee and the various budget divisions. Then after that resolution is adopted, we get to paragraph 7.6. And when bills go to the floor, the finance committee says, we've checked with these bills and they all fit within our budget resolutions, both the overall and the individual bill targets, and everything balances. And so when you get to paragraph 7.7 and somebody moves to amend one of those bills on the floor, if it would cause any of those limits to be exceeded, then it's out of order. And determining whether it's in order or out of order is up to the president. And you can see the factors that the president is to consider. And that basically is the process.
So you have a resolution ultimately that's adopted in the finance committee that the president is supposed to use as his or her guide.
Mr. Chairman, yeah.
That's what this says.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we've really done any of this, have we?
I've used it.
Does it work?
Yeah.
So there have been some things that have been ruled out of order?
Yes.
Chairman, when did we add this to this budget resolution to the rules? Was it in the Ventura years?
No.
Was it before that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, it was in 2001.
Yes, sir. Senator Cohen.
That is.
Chairman, the
after that.
As I started to indicate before, you asked Mr. Watson to go through the rule itself. And again, in a theoretical sense, I'm the biggest proponent of this rule. Difficulty we have is it's kind of one size fits all, and it doesn't lend itself to changes in Senate structure. A little bit this year, two things. When we adopted the rule, we had, I believe, six finance divisions, and we have 10. Now, putting aside whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, the reality is we have 10 finance divisions, and it becomes that much more difficult to make it work. Second, at least insofar as to where we are this session, three of us sit on Senator Pappas's finance division. We passed her bill. So given the schedule we're attempting to set to the Senate, we would like to get, not wait until a logjam at the end of the session. We're well along the way of passing appropriation bills, finance bills at this point. And so this rule, to be honest, at least insofar as this year's session is concerned, is rendered obsolete. And if the Senate's going to continue to, and I like doing some of the stuff earlier, if the Senate decides it likes this schedule that we're utilizing this year, and we continue with it in future bienniums, this rule has to be implemented in February 1st or something. So I, like I said, in a theoretical sense, I like it, but it's one not practical this year. And two, unless we maintain a rigid calendar and make it constitutional, that's not going to happen. A rigid calendar and a rigid committee structure, that's where this rule becomes difficult to implement. And As you know, Mr. Chairman, I'm the one who's argued in the theoretical sense for the rule.
That's why, and based on what Senator Berglund said, that's why I asked for this imposing limits on amendments to be passed, because it appears that the only thing, if we repealed this rule, the only thing that some members of the Senate would want is something like this, then, for floor activity. That's how I got to where I am here, because the rest of this is almost... It's obsolete, this year at least, and probably other years. Let me ask the general, and I think this may be from the minority caucus. This year we gave you those targets about the same time, we got a couple days of when it was put. Sure. I mean, you got it about the same time everybody else did. Mm-hmm. Senator Cohen and the budget chairs have been talking about it with Senator Bach for a couple weeks. But about the time it was ready for prime time, it became public. No formal action's been taken on that, on those targets. So one thing we could do is take formal action on those targets, if we chose to, or not. But if we were going to have something along the lines of for amendments, we would obviously want formal action, because so everybody knew what the ground rules were. And all I'm asking is, does any of that make any sense to the minority or not? Like budget chairs, you should know. I mean, I think you do know. And I think their divisions, generally, they work hard on these bills, and they would like to avoid amendments on the floor that just said, well, I would have liked to have spent it on that, whether you have the money or not. That's how a budget chair thinks. But you wouldn't want to block amendments that someone basically said, no, I would rather spend that $1 million on X rather than Y. And so it all nets out. I mean, that seems fair for a member to offer that. And we're trying to, I think we need to figure out as a group in the Senate, how do we want to do this in a way that actually functions the way and accomplishes what members need in terms of making their amendments, getting their budgets, targets, understanding what the ground rules are. And so, Senator Bach?
Well, Chairman, I think there is a possibility this year that the tax bill may end up passing the Senate before one or more of the finance bills.
Okay.
Just because of the mechanical timing of getting fiscal notes and getting some of the larger finance bills put together. If that were to happen, and we didn't have some way to limit what the finance bills that come behind the tax bill, I mean, we'd have a budget out of balance if finance bills grew over what the tax bill, which had already left the Senate floor, had raised. So I think somehow we have to build some restraint in that the targets are the targets in the event the tax bill goes first and then we have no opportunity to pay for additional spending.
People just want to cogitate this privately among themselves? Or
Chair, could I ask perhaps the consult? I'm looking at, for instance, this line for page 5.345, and then I'm looking at the resolution. It is effectively the resolution about the same as we had in terms of limiting amendments. I mean, is this more restrictive than what we had here? In, for instance, line 5.3 and line 4. Pardon me.
Are you asking, are these two things different?
Yeah, line 5. Okay. 5.3 and 5.4 talk about amendments being out of order. And this, of course, talks about amendments being out of order. But basically, effectively, the language is the same thing. It's what we had in Rule 7 versus what we have here in the amendments.
Counsel?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, essentially the mechanics are different. With the resolution, or the budget resolution under Rule 7, you've got a target resolution that has said what's an absolute dollar amount in each of the bills. But if we don't have that kind of a target resolution, then you need some other base to be working from if we're trying to make things balance. And the base in this other resolution, the Dash 3 resolution, is just the bill as it's reported to the floor. That whatever comes out of the Finance Committee, that's the total you have to work with. If you want to spend more money, you have to raise more money.
Or net something out in the bill.
Or net something out in the bill. Move it around in the bill.
That's almost more flexible in a way, isn't it, Mr. Watson? That seems more flexible almost than a dollar amount.
Mr. Chairman, it would be more flexible because it's more of a relative limit rather than an absolute limit.
Mr. Chair, and here to follow up, Senator Birdwood sitting next to me. Were her finance bill to come to the floor, and it will. And if a certain member would choose to want to amend something out of the bill, cut some money out of the bill, would that be permissive, at least in terms of a floor amendment?
Mr. Representative Sengen, yes.
But you couldn't add above the.
Cutting is okay.
Yeah, above the target.
But Mr. Chairman, you wouldn't, to that point, you wouldn't be allowed to redirect it. In other words, you can't, unless you do the debate at the target level, there's no changing of targets because you're not allowed to adjust that, is it? So that
between
it's different notes. Before from how it was reported to the floor of the Senate. And I don't understand the second one. It's out of order to change appropriations for revenues to an agency that was not in the bill as it was reported. So are there some agencies that are not going to be in a bill?
Mr. Watson.
And so there, or is it, you can't put something in relative to an agency that might be in a different bill? Is that what that means?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, that's exactly what it means. That you have to live with the agencies that are in that particular bill. If you're talking about the Health and Human Services bill, it's the Human Services Department, the Health Department, and so forth. You can't be taking money from there and putting it into the Department of Natural Resources mm-hmm. or some agency that's in a different bill.
So it doesn't allow for that kind of a discussion. So it is restrictive of debate or different values in terms of where expenditures. It is
between
it's
bills. Mm-hmm. Is that how current Rule 7 works, 7.7 or not?
Mr. Chairman, under Rule 7, if you took the money out of the Human Services bill, that's perfectly fine under either approach. But you couldn't then put it into the Environment bill because that would cause the limit that was in the Environment bill to be exceeded.
Under Rule 7 also.
Under Rule 7.
So but that doesn't change it from Rule 7.
Mm-hmm. But all of that's very restrictive in terms of any debate or discussion of relative values.
Yes. But this doesn't change from where we are under Rule 7. Mm-hmm. Senator Birdwood?
Well, the only thing that I see that I think is covered in Rule 7 that either isn't covered in this amendment or isn't clear in this amendment is if you had a bill for some reason that you passed that would affect the Department of Human Services, for example, let's say, and it was passed as a separate bill, and if we were carrying it, but it wasn't in our bill, we were just
on this bill. It had a separate target somewhere. By
itself. Maybe there was something controversial about the bill or whatever, and
it had $1 million appropriation.
And we wanted it to go separately, so we track those, but we don't actually have the bill in our bill. And I think this language sort of implies that you have to take into account if that bill had already been passed, then that you couldn't. That bill had to be within the target for the overall spending for that agency also.
Thoughts on that as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bergen, that's correct. That with the resolution -3, there are no overall targets for a particular area other than in that omnibus bill. There are no limits for individual bills that are not one of these omnibus bills. They're just not covered.
Right.
Are they covered in Rule 7 now?
In Rule 7, they're covered.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just thinking of the scenario that Senator Olson talked about earlier of wanting to reduce appropriations in one bill. She wouldn't be able to increase in another bill with the the Senate resolution before us think that's true, but in with the existing Rule 7, she'd be able to make that argument at a higher, at an earlier level when you set the targets in the Finance Committee by resolution. Mm-hmm. Because she could say she wants the Health and Human Service appropriation lower and the appropriation for the Environment and Natural Resource Bill higher.
You do have the problem, one, if you're not on the Finance Committee, you can't do it. But then secondly, until you know what the finalized bills are, you probably don't know how strongly you feel about that.
Exactly. Until you see what's in the bills
right,
and what's...
Right. So, Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, you're right. All the decisions under either approach on allocating between the various different divisions or the different omnibus bills, all those decisions are made within the Finance Committee. Under neither scenario is there a debate on the floor over how much should go into human services versus environment. That's all within the Finance Committee. And when each of these bills comes through the Finance Committee under the Type 3 approach, the Finance Committee would have the authority to take some money out of one bill and put it into another bill, if that's what the Finance Committee wants to do. The difference is that under the Rule 7 approach, that discussion about how much should be in each bill occurs before you pass any bills. So before you see what's in the bill, you decide what its total is going to be. Whereas under the second approach, it's when the bill comes through and you see, well, is what's in here what I want or is it not what I want? Then you can change it if it's not to your liking.
Mr. Chairman, if you're on the if you're a member of that committee.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you?
Mr. Chairman, it ties it up pretty tight in terms of what you can and cannot do in terms of discussion of the bills, but I think that's been the intent for a number of years.
Well, we haven't really used it.
Yeah, we've used it. I've used it several times.
I don't recall being used that much, just on your
bill. You probably just weren't paying attention because you were worried about the tax bill and you were off talking to your staff or something.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Watson. I don't know how it could have been used a lot on the floor if we only did it once.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it hasn't taken as long to get the budget bills through because you can't do much.
Right. I mean, and there's always a discussion on the floor of whether something is over the target
debate.
Or not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's even without having formally adopted a resolution on the floor that sets the overall limit and then within the Finance Committee that sets the limit on the bills. We've had that discussion. But without actually having adopted the resolutions.
Oh, I think it was used when we had it, and it was attempted to be used when we didn't have it.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't clear that we hadn't actually done it.
And what happened those years? What happened those times when it was attempted to be used and we didn't actually have
it? It was pretty mucky in terms of trying to figure out what we should be doing.
Okay. Senator Metzen, do you have any recollection?
No, I don't. I'm just thinking about it. I don't remember. Was it earlier and how many years ago?
Yeah, it was...
Before Jay? Before Jim?
No.
Did I do it?
You did it.
I got a good memory, yeah.
You did a good job of it, too.
Right? I bet I did well.
Yeah.
We had more arguments over whether something was out of order or not.
And, you know, also what I recall is that, you know, if you do it, I mean, if you use it once or twice, then people get the idea that, you know,
then leave it alone.
Yeah, that amendment I had, maybe I won't offer it, you know.
But you're right. I know I was good at whatever I did, Dick.
Perfect. That's how I recall it.
Yep. Same here.
Well, why don't members think about this? It seems to me, whether you're in the majority or minority, I could be totally wrong here, but it seems to me that amendments that are real are more effective than phony amendments, regardless of being a majority or minority. And if you're trying to get accountability on votes, it's easier to be truly accountable if it's a real vote rather than I want to spend $10 million on something and I have no idea how I pay for it.
Where you get the money.
But again, I'm speaking from a majority perspective. Maybe that's not how it's viewed.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I do believe that there were years before that number 7, Rule 7, that was a general rule, that you couldn't increase unless you had something to pay for it. but you weren't blocked from necessarily drawing it from other areas as a part of that discussion and debate. So that was, with this rule and the budget resolution, that was constrained. So there's a great restriction, and, you know, you carry all the shots when you set those targets, and that bill is there, and there's no room for at least any amendment. One could argue it. That's why I said you can, unless you have long arguments and debates without any amendments, that's the format that this drives for the floor.
Senator Olson, and you may not be prepared to say anything now, but what would you like it to look like on the floor in a perfect world?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not a great one to add. I don't necessarily like amendments and all that kind of stuff, so I'm the wrong one to ask for
right,
that.
I mean, you
but I'm just I'm talking about in terms of whether it's minority or people who have a different view, it does restrict that. If your objective is to do that, this does.
Any further thoughts? And I think we just need to talk among ourselves in the next few days about what we think would make sense for the Senate.
That's good.
And, I mean, Mr. Watson has mentioned to me that there, I don't know what he meant by the old days, but there was a time where it was kind of informally accepted that, you know, just senatorial courtesy, you didn't offer amendments that were out of balance. You just kind of worked with everybody in it. And I think it must have slipped away or something because...
It certainly did.
And so, presumably, if we could depend on just a cultural courtesy in the Senate, then maybe you don't need anything like this. And I believe this was a little bit driven by what was going on in the House, and then it got adopted in the Senate.
Yeah, it was going on in the Senate also. There were a lot of amendments for a while there. I just want to spend money on this, or I just want to have more for that. And you know, then people would, you know, some people would have to be responsible because they would listen to somebody telling them that we couldn't afford it, and it would leave their bill out of balance, and other people felt like they didn't need to worry about that.
It could actually be a majority member.
It could be.
Well, was mad about something they did in the finance committee.
Mr. Chairman, it takes an unusual coalition of minority and majority members to change an appropriation bill once it gets to the floor. Usually it's very, very difficult to make any kind of significant change once they get that far. Most of the changes occur in finance division and in the full finance
right.
committee.
But it is possible just to have amendments out there to get people on board.
That's usually what goes on.
Yeah.
It's part of the political process.
In a good situation, you'd want a culture in the Senate where basically everybody thought the finance committee had done a good job. Didn't get things they wanted, but there was a fair process. They all had hearings, et cetera. But maybe that's just not the way of the world anymore. I don't know. And the tax bill, we all know the tax bill has amendments that, and that's as it needs to be, I guess, the tax bill. Because that one does tend to be a little more political, ultimately, than the finance bills, historically. Even, through all of history, I think the tax bill has always been a little dicier.
Mr. Chair, perhaps again to Consul Watson, but I keep reading and reading this, and I'm imagining an appropriation bill coming to the floor at $500 million, and it almost seems to me that you could not offer an amendment to make that $510 million nor $490 million to me. It suggests to me that you can't either increase or reduce it, because you need to keep that number at the same number that it came to the floor.
You could reduce the appropriations.
Reduce it.
But you could not reduce the revenue if they've got...
Well, it says reduce net revenue.
Yeah, it does say reduce net revenue. Mr. Watson?
Right, but if I've got a bill that's in my bill, there probably will be, because the Department of Health has requested a number of fee increases for the programs that are wholly fee-supported. Well, if you offer an amendment to reduce the fee, but not to reduce the activity, then again, that part of the bill would not work.
Mr. Watson.
So that's how I read it was.
Mr. Watson.
Revenue.
Yeah.
Couldn't reduce the revenue in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjan, The difference is between appropriations and revenue.
Revenue is money coming in.
You can't increase the appropriations and you can't reduce the revenue.
Right. Revenue is money coming into the bill for some reason. So, like, if you didn't like a fee increase, then you could have an amendment to reduce it, but then you would have to have, as a part of that amendment, reducing whatever that fee revenue was going to pay for. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would be out of order.
Okay, so members, Rule 7 is in the rules now, right? I mean, we've adopted that. So our options are to do something different than what's in Rule 7. So let's just think about it for a couple days, talk among ourselves. Mr. Flavin, did you want to add any historical perspective on any of this?
Mr. Chairman, the last time I remember one of these discussions was when Senator Mullen was majority leader. There were some amendments that were offered, and he raised the issue about, Senator, if you're going to increase appropriations, where are you going to get the money?
And there were some rulings from the chair, apparently, as you recall.
I don't know if there were rulings from the chair. I think there were discussions on the floor between members.
Well, I remember asking to have amendments ruled out of order based on this, and that
the ruling
was that it was out of order.
Did we have a rule ahead of this time that essentially did what Senator Moe was talking about, that if you did offer an amendment, you had to provide the funding for it? I thought we did, as a transition from the old behavior where you could willy-nilly offer amendments, whether the money was there or not, to one that at least you had to have a balance thing before we actually went to the...
Lots of shakes, yes.
Well, I thought that there was, at that time, if there wasn't a rule, there was a resolution or some language
something.
Mr. Watson?
No, Mr. Chairman, there was neither a rule nor a resolution, but Senator Moe did... just tell people.
Yeah,
this is the way we're going to operate.
That's what I remember.
Your amendments have to balance. Yeah. And people said, oh, okay, my amendment has to balance.
The voice of authority.
And if somebody offered an amendment that was out of balance, then people just voted against it. I mean, it wasn't ruled out of order. It was just defeated because the members understood that you couldn't really be offering an amendment that was out of balance. So that's just the way the Senate has operated.
So that was a cultural...
It's a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, there's some place between here and there that things got really on a different track. Because, I mean, I've even seen amendments where people decided they didn't get something they wanted, and so they just offered an amendment to put it in the tails.
Oh, yes, I remember those.
Yeah, you remember some of those? We can't have it now, but I don't really have to pay for it if I...
Yeah.
It later.
I do remember in the early days when I was in the Senate, there really was not tails discussions because that was something that was just kind of taken care of by the leadership. And you never got into this problem. Then it must have slipped away because then there were these kind of formal discussions about tails. And I know they used to just kind of take care. I remember sitting in, with Senator Johnson and Senator Moe where they would say, well, they can't do that because XYZ 2 years or 4 years from now. And then somehow it magically got fixed. Informally. But that must have slipped away because then we started to have official tail targets.
It was during the Carlson.
Yeah,
Governor Carlson was real hardcore on tails,
yep.
Yes. He did a good job there. So, all right, well, members, talk among yourselves and let's see if we can't come up with something that makes sense for the full Senate. But we have Rule 7, so we don't have to do anything. But it would be better to, my sense would be better to do something that we all thought worked for us in this modern time.
Rule 7 doesn't totally kick in until 30 days after, which you're scheduled to have all the bills out of the Senate before you have to meet Rule 7.
The horse will be out of the barn.
No, we could, right, but we could set the resolution and make Rule 7 effective.
But you don't have to, and then it's meaningless.
Correct. So, okay, meeting adjourned.